our amazing shrinking world. Last week, the topic was called From Generation to Generation. And frankly, what our kids did, and those kids are our kids, whether they're our personal biological kids or not, they are our future. And I'll be talking a little bit about why today. They blew me away with their dedication. They gave me inspiration. When I thought about from generation to generation, and I mentioned this last week, you usually think about you take yours and you take it and you hand it off to the next, and then you wave them and bye-bye and you wish them well. But the inspiration can come back. They pass the torch back to us with their energy, their values, their enthusiasm, their reminder to us to renew our commitment to this world and to their world. It was a remarkable, remarkable example of who we are by what we do and what we have passed on to our children in this amazing and shrinking world. And I'll get to the shrinking part in a second. All right, in a minute. It's an occupational hazard for you new people, what can I tell you? There's so much in our shrinking world that terrifies people. We see all of the pain and all of the problems of the world coming to our shores. We look at the world and we are connected by cell phone, as somebody will remind us during the service, I'm sure, by internet, by television, by radio. A virus, a grievance, a problem can get on a plane, can cross over on a wire, and can come to our country. We can run, but we can't hide. We can run from the problems of the world. We can try to turn off the internet, turn off the television, shut our ears to all of the pain in the world. But it's like trying to avoid an oil slick in the Gulf of Mexico. It will spread. It will touch us. There is only one ocean. There's only one body of water, and it flows around the world and in every river and in us. We are all a part of the mainland. We are all a part of the greater story of humanity. There are people who are appropriately terrified by all of this and see it all coming ashore and washing over us and inundating us and just being overwhelmed by the pain that is out there. And the response to the pain that is out there needs to be attention. It needs to be compassion. It needs to be open minds and open hearts. And we need to respond to it. But it is also the case that there are so many wonderful things out there that we don't see and that don't register. The media, of which I am a member, rightly gets blamed for only telling the bad news, only conveying the tragedy and the pain, not the hope and the celebration. They're coming. All of those immigrants are coming to America. Context, please. If you will look at American history, you will see that when you have one or two people from a different group, from the normal people, whether you are Inuit or whatever your definition of normal is, they are exotic. Then there is a middle ground where they are threatening and dangerous and going to overwhelm us, and every ethnic and national and religious group that has ever come to this country has been seen as at some point dangerous and going to drown us. And then there is that integration when we become from across the globe something that we call American. Not perfect, but an interesting combination of a melting pot where we don't necessarily give up all of our differences. I prefer the model of the mosaic, where we take our differences and we put them together in patterns. In fact, I prefer another metaphor, which is the kaleidoscope, where you take all of those differences, all of those colors, all of those shapes, and as you look at the light and turn it, they shift and realign, and we can find chaos in it, see only the sharp edges, or we can see the beauty. We don't report when things go right. It is only news when the shuttle crashes, not when it lands. It is news, and we know all of the ethnic and religious strife around the world, and it's true, and we shouldn't ignore it. We know all the political strife around the world as group kills group in the name of religion or tribe or nationality. All of that's true. We know that the Middle East is a mess, and I think you can blame everyone who is human for being part of the mess, because that's part of our mess. All of that's true. And we get all of that information and all of the pain. And how many people saw the story about Israel and Jordan working together to create infrastructure on the West Bank and to train police and raise up a civil society? Will it work or not? I don't know. But we don't report it. We report the death, the pain, and the blood. We know that if it bleeds, it leads. And that means that we're only getting less than half of the story, because the space shuttle doesn't blow up nearly as often as it lands. The airplanes are mostly successful. People, decent people, live together and cooperate together and learn from each other more than we fight, more than all the strife. The strife is loud, it's real, it's dangerous, but it is not inevitable, and it is not a real picture of the world. When we look at the travel warnings that are on our country's website — our country has a website, thank God they're not tweeting yet, but they have a website, and they tell us all the dangers that are out there. For goodness sakes, don't go to the Middle East. Don't go to Mexico. Don't go here. Maybe they're just trying to keep the dollars here. But I've been in lots of places that are supposed to be dangerous, few of them as dangerous as the 60 at closing hour, and it's mostly people. It's mostly people living good and decent lives and not hating their neighbor and not fearing their neighbor and not killing their neighbor. I have lived and traveled in Eastern Europe, in communist countries. I lived in Austria under less than 10 years after the liberation of Austria. I've lived in Arab countries and Muslim countries. I've lived all over. And everywhere I have gone, I have been met with mostly kindness. Invitations to lunch, invitations to dinner, smiles and embraces. And that includes even New York. I mean, astounding things happen out there in the world because most people are basically good. And if you watch television and watch the news, you would never know that. You would be shifting and cringing in fear of all of those others, other races, ethnicities, religions, nationalities, and classes who are out there and want to take something from us violently. There are bad and violent people in the world. I don't ignore it. But the vast majority of our planet is filled with decency and generosity. I remember, and it's a story that I've told before, but it bears telling again. I remember being on a caravan across the Sahara and falling very, very ill. And it's a little scary when you're ill, and this is before the invention of cell phones and satellites, and you're out there in the middle of the desert and babbling in delirium, not unlike a sermon occasionally, and I thought I'd say it before you did. They stopped the caravan. And I remember looking at Sisala as he was doing something in a bowl and then handing me the bowl and spoon feeding me. And I asked him when I came back to myself, what was that? And he said, you were too weak to pray. So I wrote a healing prayer from the Quran, in the bowl and I dissolved it in the soup and I fed you the prayer. Now, my theology isn't important here. What is important is the generosity of spirit that is so great in most of humanity and we don't know it. It's not a story when the world works. So I want to tell you today a story about the world working. A true story that means that we can't just say, you know, human beings are violent. It's in our genes. The world's a mess. What's the use of bothering? Here's the use of bothering. On Friday night, I attended a performance by two of my grandchildren at the Gifted Magnet in the Valley. You knew it would be a Gifted Magnet. And the theme was peace and love and happiness. It was a blast from the past, the music of my life. The songs were, I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. Good morning, starshine, good day, sunshine. Let there be peace on earth. It was the music of my life. And I felt somewhat conflicted because the idea that the music of my life is somebody else's nostalgia is a little bit challenging. But I realized it isn't nostalgia. It is the passing on of a legacy, of hopes and of dreams, not exactly as I hoped them, not exactly as I dreamed them, but to them to make their own. It was more than the nice words. It was more than the nice music. It was what they did. It was who they were. Before all of this happened, we had a Honduran feast that we all shared, and then the kids, being kids, did what kids do, and on a 100-yard by 30-yard patch of grass, they ran, they screamed, they wrestled, they played tag, and they did not sort by color, by race, by ethnicity, or by language. As I stood out there and watched them and listened to the other adoring parents and completely verklempt grandparents of all different kinds of groups, I heard Arabic, Armenian, Hebrew, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, Russian. I heard a little bit in New York. I wasn't sure what they were talking about, but you know, you got to pay attention. And oh my God, I heard Valley. It was, and they were all playing and yelling and tagging and wrestling and giggling and crying together. It was truly a joyful noise. And it is significant how they did not sort by language or ethnicity. And then we got up there and each grade performed two songs, wonderful choreography, costumes that were appropriate to each song. And it was, the talent was wonderful. The costumes, the choreography, all of the theatrical parts were great. And everyone was proud and went, oh, aren't my kids and grandkids and their friends really wonderful and special? What was special was what we saw up there with those kids. What was special was, and I wrote it down so that I'm not making it up, were the families. When you looked at the program of Rodriguez and Brown and Astrarian and Lynn and Gustorf and Schneider and Qureshi and Wong and Rosenthal and Hussein. What was special were singing and dancing together Fatima and Jason and Rihanna and Tiffany and Jack and Nathan and Andres and Ashley, Akira and Alexander, no E in the end, and Maya and Zoe and Noelia and wow. That's the way the world should be. That's the way for a night that world was. That's the way when something goes right and we can look at them and see that the things that we use to divide us, we can use. I can dislike somebody because of something extrinsic, but I don't have to. It's a choice. I can be in the default position of the other is the bad, is the inferior, or worse, I can feel that they're the superior and then really hate them. Either way, if you elevate a group or you depress a group, you are creating an other and a separation. When we deal with individuals, this is a pretty wonderful world. And to answer the Rodney King question, yes, we can get along. Not without friction. There were kids who were running and chasing and stepped on a toe and fell down and got up, and there were threatening gestures, usually within families, not to strangers, which is another important lesson here. But it was such an example of something that our schools are doing right, that parents are doing right by putting kids into this socially and class and ethnically integrated environment. We talk in this community about the difference between being in the audience and being a part of the congregation. The difference is one is passive and the other is being together and working together and growing together and making the community your own. The same was true at the school. These parents were working and planning and bickering from time to time to make that their community. The kids were touching and bouncing off of each other, creating friction, resolving those frictions, and creating relationships. And those relationships may look to my generation as exotic. To others, it might look threatening. What happens when, if they get together and they create families? What happens is hope. What happens is the world working the way it should. What happens is that we take in information and culture, that we explore our world and make this world our own, and we keep our minds and our hearts open. The meaning of the opening reading of the Inuits going around the world, and when they were done, they died. That's it. When you're done exploring, when you're done growing, when you're done seeing the world with open eyes and open hearts and open minds, something inside dies and you stop being a part of tomorrow. We all, last week, were a part of tomorrow. And we knew it. Every day, we can make that choice to be in the default position of fear or of hope. To know and recognize all the real problems of the world and to understand it doesn't have to be like this. There can be peace on earth, and it does begin with us. And at the end of that wonderful program, all of the kids from all, I'm getting chills, all of the kids from all of the grades got on the stage and below the stage, and all together they sang what the truth was. I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. That night they did. And we can take that inspiration back, we can take that song back and make it once again our song.